Before we get on with this episode's frivolities, I'd like to apologize for the poor sound quality of my voice. Skype recorder I use decided to use my webcam's mic, not the fancy mic I wear on my head, so it sounds like I'm talking in the bathroom. My apologies.
You're listening to Random Minis, candid conversations about geek culture. All right, joining me today, I have writer Josh Gorfain. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
I have artist Joel Mulvey.
Howdy.
And I have writer Greg Pak.
Hey.
How are you guys all doing today?
Very well, thanks.
I appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedule of creating comics and whatnot to shoot the shit with me for a little while.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
Oh, man. I love talking comics. And, you know, God bless the internet and Skype and lets me talk to people I'll probably never meet in real life. So we'll just dive right into some topics that we have. And if anything comes up you guys would like to talk about, feel free to shout anything out. I'm open to anything. You know, this is, plus you guys feel free to talk as candid as you like. This is an adult podcast. Swearing is okay. All right, one of the things that's been announced and defuncted and announced again is the director for the Justice League movie. A week or so ago, we had Ben Affleck being announced as someone they wanted. Now, Affleck's kind of said he's never been attached to it. Just not too recently, we had the Wachowskis being announced as possible directors for the Justice League. Are either of those directors, you guys comfortable with those guys? Do you have someone else you think you would want to see as a director for the Justice League?
I don't know. It's not really the director. I mean... It's they're trying to do their version of the Avengers, and it's not going to happen. There's not enough backstory or tie-in films to a Justice League film to make it work like the Avengers did. It just seems it's going to be like just a cheap knockoff. That it's going to be like, ooh, Superman, ooh, Batman. It's not going to be Christian Bale. It's not going to be Henry Cavill, or it's not going to be whoever, you know, was going to be in the Wonder Woman movie, if that makes sense.
At the same time, they've got, I mean, I think they've got a, they, Marvel had to do what they did because those characters were well-known in the comics world, but not well-known in the outside world so much. You know what I mean? Like Iron Man, Thor, you know, I mean, those were, anybody who reads comics knows and loves those characters, but the average person on the street was not going to be as aware of them. On the other hand, everybody knows Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman for that matter. So I feel like they don't necessarily have to lay a groundwork for those characters. They can, you know, I mean if they make a great movie there, it's just going to work on its own level because people are already aware of those characters. That's my guess.
No, I think actually that's a good point for Greg, because I was going to say the same thing. Like, everyone gets up in arms. Like, I heard Brett Ratner's name thrown around, and people are like, oh my God, if Brett Ratner touches this, I wouldn't see this piece of shit, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you haven't even seen a second of any film. Like, you know, these characters are characters that you know, and, you know, for the most part, every original standalone movie that DC has tried with their characters, for the most part, hasn't really connected like the Marvel ones have outside of Batman. So... Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if you get that one director or the one screenplay that really kind of delivers these heroes, maybe, you know, what they've been missing are the single plot films and the single character films they could deliver with, you know, a big action-packed movie. Because I know who saw Avengers that literally liked Avengers without seeing some of the other movies. Mm-hmm. So I think you could do just a good superhero movie, you know, and especially Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Aquaman. Like, people would go to see that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of the names of the Trinity is well known. Even Green Lantern, as people may have not liked that movie, his name was all over the place. And if you say Green Lantern now, people either know the Ryan Reynolds movie or they know the black guy from the Justice League cartoon. And I think having that already set, they can almost do Avengers in reverse. Say, hey, look at all these cool characters we have, and now here are their own individual little movies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The only thing that would guarantee a fail, I think, is if you heard the words Shaquille O'Neal will reprise his role as Steel, and Halle Berry will play Catwoman. I think those two things might sink it, but beyond that, anyone would give it a chance.
Oh, man, that would be Shaquille O'Neal as Steel. That was an awesome movie. I don't know what you're talking about, man. I watch that DVD every day. It's my inspiration.
Stevie Wonder actually was quoted as saying he was happy he was blind when the movie came out.
Now, is there? Do you guys have a preference for a director? Do you want like a big time action director like Zack Snyder they have over on Superman, because he's known for doing the slow motion, cool action stuff? Or do you want a different type of director, like what they went with Thor when they got Kenneth Branagh, where he wasn't typically a superhero? You wouldn't think of him as a superhero director. What do you guys think they should go with?
I think they need to go with someone with a really good track record, like Brett Ratner. Not so much. Wachowskis probably can do it right. If they let them loose, but it has to be a good track record, because with their, you know, like Joe said, with all the other movies except for the Dark Knight series, pretty subpar.
True. I wonder what the tone they go for. Do you think they're? I mean, what we've seen with just, I mean, from the little bit we've seen on the Superman teaser trailer and what we've seen of the Dark Knight, they seem to go kind of a more darker, more serious tone with their movies, where I think a lot of the success of the Avengers was that it was just fun. It was sit back, put your feet up, eat some popcorn, and watch superheroes punch shit in the face. That's kind of what we had going on for 90 minutes. And
I may be too influenced by just, you know, having, you know, by the Avengers having that sort of in my head. But I mean, when I think about a Justice League movie, I think about the characters. I think about how much fun it'll. I mean, I think about the Dark Knight. I think about like the Superman Batman interactions in Frank Miller's Dark Knight, and how much, I mean, just how incredibly fun that stuff is. And it just makes me think that whoever they get to do it, you know, whoever's doing the screenplay, whoever's directing the thing, just has to really be in love with has to really understand those characters and have fun with their interactions. I mean, I think it needs to be a character-centric movie to work, because, I mean, that's the whole point of bringing these characters together, is to see how their different personalities are going to clash and what they're going to bring out in each other. That's my two cents. I think they just got to get somebody who understands character.
I would agree with that.
What I was going to say was, like, I think that, yeah, like, to that point, like, I feel like a lot of the DC movies before this, except for the Nolan ones, and you could say it's guided by success or whatever, or just the success of Batman, like, I think there was a vision, there was a point, there was, you know, a little bit of this director getting the character. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like with a lot of the other films, like, you know, and I'll say Green Lantern because the last one is the most recent in my head, they were literally throwing shit out to see if it stuck. Like, I didn't feel like that, because you really didn't have a character. It was like, okay, Ryan Reynolds has done 6 million sit-ups. He's ready to take the role on. And you never really got into, like, what the great character Hal Jordan is. You never really got that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Blake Lively's bust, his abs, and a green suit, let's make a movie, seemed more the screenplay to me than really get the character. Whereas with the Batman movies, they have a vision. They have a point. They have an overall theme. And I think if you stick with a theme of, like, a team that comes together to save the world, you know, I mean, that could be an unbelievable origin. You could even reverse the Marvel setup where they could launch from the Justice League movie if they did it properly and introduce these characters, you know, make the Justice League movie the origin movie and then go from that way. I don't know. It's, you know, those are my two.
Well, do you think they'd be better suited at maybe starting smaller and just doing a world's finest Superman Batman movie? That way two characters that everyone on the planet knows, these two characters, knows their history, and just do a movie with them, and then maybe do Justice League 2 years from now?
Nah, I think they got, well, I think they gotta do Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. I think that Trinity is, I think you gotta have those. I mean, I think it's funny just hearing you talk about was that you, Joe? Was that who was just talking about the I'm mixing up voices now. Who was that who was just talking about?
That was Joe.
Someone sounds like Joe Pesci, it's me.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. But yeah, just hearing you talk about that, like this, you know, like the idea of this group comes together to save the world. That could be a heck of an introduction for Wonder Woman. You know, I'm just putting on my writer hat here. It'd just be a lot of fun to have Wonder Woman in this movie come in as this kind of avenging angel. You know what I mean? Almost like this goddess figure. And she's, you know, I mean, she's the first, you know, person who's ever been able to challenge Superman, you know, on his own level. And she's a huge challenge for Batman. But, you know, I mean, like, she would just be a great counterpoint for them. And then in a subsequent movie, you can explore her integrating with, you know, regular humans, you know, taking on a human identity and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a really great way to bring her in as this, you know, as this goddess, and then, and then you can do a follow up picture that that lets you see, you know, do the fish out of water thing where she's trying to, you know, it's Clark Kent in Manhattan kind of thing. I don't
maybe
know.
A that, love triangle, maybe, what, you know, like little
yeah, totally.
Two of them fighting over an Amazon.
You know? Yeah, sure. I mean, my preference, if I were actually writing the thing, which of course I'm not, but would be to keep that fairly subtle as opposed to overt. You know what I mean? Just have some tension there, and you know, like Batman would be sort of, you know, being stoic and grumpy and standoffish, but then there would be some hints, some very funny hints here and there, where you realize he's actually really, you know, enamored of her. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like the way they play the Thor Hulk rivalry in the Avengers, where you know, like there would be that kind of I mean, a totally different scale, but sort of you know, I mean, in terms of you know, they're not punching each other for comic effect there, but you know, the way that Thor Hulk rivalry was just kind of dropped in here and there, and it just kind of punctuated, and it was a fun little character bit that developed over the course of the movie. I think a similar kind of thing you could do with a Batman Wonder Woman thing, but yeah, you know, I'm just spitballing, but I think there's a lot of fun stuff there, but I mean, but the stuff that but again, that's like that character stuff just has to work. I mean, anybody can, you know, can do crazy action stuff, you know what I'm saying? But and it's got to have crazy action stuff, and that's going to be a blast. But it but it's not going to mean anything unless the those characters, we really fall in love with those characters.
True. Which is what the first movies of the Avengers series did.
Uh-huh.
When they do Justice League, they're going to be really tempted to do 3 or 4 or 5 origin stories in the movie with and like 10 minutes of the team together doing their thing.
Yeah,
that's probably a problem.
That's definitely a danger. I just hope that they realize that everybody knows, at least Superman and Batman, we know their origins. You know, the Green Lantern movie just came out, so we know he's a guy with a magic green. You mean we don't need to go too in depth. Just a quick, oh, she's from an island of Amazon goddesses. Okay, cool. That's Wonder Woman. Now we know who she is. And Aquaman, oh, he's the king of Atlantis. Okay, that's all you really need to know. I mean, you know, he's a water, he has water, he's gonna be a water-based person, so that's what we know. All I want to see, though, this is what I've said since I heard they were going to do a Justice League movie. They have to fight a giant space starfish in the first movie. Come on. That's just, to me, that'd be cool. That enormous visual, that space starfish, get some of those starfishes on their teammates' faces. They got to fight each other. Gives them a reason to have Superman throw down with Wonder Woman and Batman trying to take down the Flash, something like that. And they win and save the day. Yay. But I want my space starfish.
Well, let me ask this. Who would be the villain?
Starro,
right there. Either Starro or Despero. Why not? Why not start there?
So that's okay. All right. I mean, I think that's going to be a hard sell, but you know, Fisher Price would love it because they could jump all over Starro toys and Starro floaties.
Well, if they had to do though, I mean, if they want to beat the Avengers movie out, Avengers 2 out the gate, they should do Darkseid, because then when Avengers 2 come out and you see Thanos, you're like, oh, didn't the Justice League just fight this guy? Because they're very similar visually.
Right.
If you want to steal the thunder from the Avengers, you could do that. I just think Starro is just a cool visual, and like you said, toys and all sorts of different options. You could do little stick them, friggin' throw them on the wall, Starro things you can stick on your other toys. Why the heck not? So.
And they can throw in a subtle Lex Luthor Legion of Doom plot in the background for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that hard. It's just it's the execution that's going to be tricky.
Exactly. Now, staying on movies. And what we've seen in the last decade or so is Hollywood.
Oh, sorry. Let me interrupt you real
quick. Sure.
You know who would be the idea? You know, if I could pick any director, I'd pick Steven Soderbergh.
Oh,
yes.
That's a good call.
Okay. So we got Greg Pak writing and Steven Soderbergh directing Justice League 2015.
There we go.
Let's make it happen.
I'm down. call my agent.
There we go. We'll make it happen. We have power.
Well, listen, why don't we just start kickstarting this right now and just be done?
What would be the number we would need? We'd say about $200 million on Kickstarter. That's possible.
Yeah. First of all, hold on. That's just my cut. No. $200 million. We gotta get some bank on this. I'm talking. Could we get a zillion? Could we be the first $1 billion?
A billion.
And we'll just throw Neil Gaiman's name in. We won't even say he's involved. We'll just say something like, we're making our own Justice League movie, Neil Gaiman. Boom. That's already $500 million.
Just list him as an executive producer. He doesn't have to do anything. Boom.
He's a spiritual advisor.
There you go. He's our totem animal. But I was just saying, Hollywood has been making a lot of 80s TV shows into movies. You got the A-Team and all that kind of stuff going on. And I found out, sadly, that they're making an Elf movie. That very weird, weird little alien show is being made into a movie, which I don't know why. And I'm just wondering, are there any other 80s properties you guys would want to see as a movie, something you enjoyed when you were a 20-something or a teenager, depending how old you are, that you would want to see as a movie?
No, not at all, because they never hold up.
I don't know. I liked A-Team. I mean, I never really watched the show, but I liked A-Team, the movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of conflicted, because like I was a kid in the 80s, and like late 80s or whatever. So like I'm thinking, you know, part of me says I'm sick of all these remakes and reboots and re-this and re-that. Like, give me some original stuff. Give me something new, not Die Hard 7, Die Hardedest, whatever it is. Like, you know, but then like as a kid, like, you know, I don't think there was anything bigger when I was a kid than like the Thundercats. Oh, and that's still yet to ever see a movie. So, you know, I don't know if you guys have checked out the new cartoon, but it's like, you know, they've caught like a cool little way of reinventing it that I like. So I guess I'd say the Thundercats.
I grew up watching.
Or Family Ties. Maybe Family Ties. Who knows?
Family Ties.
Yeah. Family Teeny Ties. Others played by Jessica Alba. You know, that character or whatever, would be fantastic.
No, I got it right now. It's BJ and the Bear, the movie.
Oh, there you go. There we go. Classic.
Guy and his monkey driving around the country solving crimes.
And you could put in, if that movie works, then Mr. Belvedere starring Vin Diesel would absolutely happen the season after.
What do you have, Greg?
I grew up watching the only TV show, well, the two TV shows that I loved when I was a kid were Incredible Hulk and Battlestar Galactica. And, I mean, we've gotten the amazing Battlestar Galactica, you know, remake TV show, so I'm satisfied on that front. And then we've had a number of Hulk movies, but I got to tell you, if they do, I am just dying to see what they come up with, and if we're gonna get if and when we get a Mark Ruffalo Hulk movie, because I think that's I don't have any inside information. I'll just say this here right out right now.
Everything Hulk goes through you. We all know this.
No. I don't. I have no idea. I don't know anything more than what anybody else knows from reading the internet and everything. But you know, there's been talk about a Hulk TV show, and I feel like the West Coast really gets the Hulk right now. I think the depiction of the way Mark Ruffalo and you know, and that script came together to and what they did with the special effects and everything. I thought that's just the best depiction of the Hulk I've ever seen in live action, and the Hulk and Banner specifically. But you know, if they can carry that vibe and that level of you know, pathos and humor into a TV show, I think that would be spectacular. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, can we all agree that if there's anyone that should be tapped to write the Hulk movie, it should be Greg fucking Pak. And I'm putting an F in the middle, Greg, because, dude, you wrote some of the best Hulk stories ever.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel like, you know, like, especially like with Marvel, that yeah, you should like have, you know, like you always hear like, you know, the Thor movie, Matt Fraction got brought in. I'm like, I've seen two Hulk movies, you know, not, I wouldn't say that they've yet to get the character. And I even would say that the Avengers thing, while good, they used him like a special flavor. They didn't really get into the character that much. But dude, just knock on your door. If any Marvel guys are listening to this, if any Hollywood guys listen to this, get a big bag of money. Like, I mean, a hefty one, like one of those ones that, you know, you have to get at Home Depot because they're extra thick. You don't want anything to tear. Just throw it at Greg Pak's window and or door. I'm not, you know, threatening violence. And just get the man to write the movie, because I guarantee you, a Greg Pak Hulk movie would be better than the two we've seen.
Well, yeah, what I was going to say is my two favorite Hulk arcs was the Planet Hulk and the Hulk arc from around issue 300, where he got banished to the crossroads of reality.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, exactly. That's I grew up on that arc, that whole arc, up until like the John Byrne when he took over at like 314 or so. But the only problem is like he would be off planet or out of the dimension. So when it comes down to Avengers 2, he's going to be hard to shoo him back into the world, as it were. But
let me ask you guys this: we were just talking about DC's problem is that they constantly, well, maybe I didn't say it out loud, they constantly reintroduce characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they constantly tell you what you kind of already know, and I feel like that's the one misstep that the Hulk movies make. Like, they always, you know, squash what's been done before, and then they try to tell you who this guy is. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think that's a character device you really need? Like, I don't feel like you need necessarily the first half of the movie to be like, who is this guy?
Well, I think that's why the Hulk was so well received in the movie, was that there wasn't a ton of backstory. You know, okay, he's this calm, quiet scientist guy, and when he gets all riled up, he turns big and beats the crap out of things. He's super huge and strong. That's all you really knew, and that's why I think people were able to grab onto it and enjoy it for in its simplest form. And while I'm talking about that, I did have a question I wanted to ask Greg. In the movie, the whole thing about him saying, I'm always angry, and he just flicks on a switch and he turns into the Hulk, that to me seemed off. Is that how the Hulk is supposed to be? I mean, not that he's supposed to be the fictional character, but I always thought it was like a ray, like he had to like hit a build up to the Hulk, like it was a rage thing. But see him just turn it on and off, it was almost like he was Captain Marvel or Shazam.
I love that. My feeling about the Hulk is that you can play with him a million different ways depending on where Banner's head is at any given time. You know what I mean? Like there have been so many different incarnations of the Hulk over the years, and they all make sense because at different stages, this is my spin on it, that at different stages in his life, Banner has a different relationship with anger and different levels of ability to control himself. And so different kind, and also he's just going through different things. So at different times in his life, a different kind of Hulk comes out when he loses it. Mm-hmm. So that idea that this particular Banner is, you know, that he is, yeah, I mean, if you get him all riled up, he's going to, you know, he's going to Hulk out. He won't be able to control himself. But at the same time, this notion that he's constantly angry and constantly controlling himself is really awesome and scary at the same time. You know what I mean? And it's also, and I think that does several things at the same time, which is just, which I think is just genius, is that it makes him scary, and it also makes him more heroic, because you realize how hard he's working all the time to try to control himself and keep the world safe from himself. You know what I'm saying? So I love that bit. I thought it was right on. You know, it doesn't. I mean, the thing. I mean, the way I feel about the Hulk is that I don't feel like people, like, I don't get all agitated if people do a different spin on it, because I feel like the character from the beginning has been incredibly flexible and can, you know, like I said, as Banner's life changes, as he goes through changes, the Hulk changes. So I'm always excited to see slightly different interpretations and, you know, and see how they make emotional sense. And that was one that just really made sense to me. So I was down with it.
If Greg Fox says it's okay, then it's okay. You're the Hulk authority. I trust you.
Pac approved.
Exactly. We need that stamp on things. That way it works. All right. This has happened recently on the Twitter. It kind of blew up all over the place with Rob Liefeld. And we don't need to really go into who's right or wrong in this situation or what side you're on. This notion of everything being so public. We had, like I said, we had Liefeld going after editors and other creators on Twitter. We have creators quitting things on Twitter, announcing that they're leaving Marvel or DC or whatever on Twitter. This should be, to me, it's like you're doing it like that. The comic industry is small enough as it is, and going so public and in certain cases so angry with things, it seems like you're burning bridges in a very, very small town. And you're going to limit yourself so much. I mean, what's the mindset that would let you get to the point where you're slamming people or quitting things publicly? I would never in my head think of doing that. Maybe because I'm not in the inside of the industry yet and I don't want to burn a bridge I haven't walked across. But that's just me. I don't know. What is up with that?
I'm going to just say this, and I'm nobody. How dare you ask me that fucking question? How dare you do that? How dare you put any of us through this shit? I'm going to go tweet about your mother right now, because this is the kind of shit I don't need to put up with.
I've already tweeted that you're a hack and you're a tracer, Mr. Moldy. So
first of all, I will never deny those truths. But yeah, no, my thing is, like, I don't know the dude. So, you know, and also you don't know what the guy was going through. Maybe it wasn't the best outlet, but, you know, everyone's like, love him or hate him. I'm kind of like, you know, just like, let the guy be. Let him be a creator. He's a creator. Do what he wants to do. And I don't have to, you know, I don't have to wear his hat. I don't do his job. So it's not, you know, it's not really the biggest thing for me. It's not the greatest thing, I would say, to cause a stir for your, you know, I guess the public image you want to have, like, you know, for your fans. But at the same time, you know, I think he should have a reality show. So go for it.
I don't know. It seems that to me, the initial tweet that Liefeld released was just a announcement that he's done with DC. Mm-hmm. And then someone metaphorically poked him with a stick, and then he went off. And mm-hmm. and honestly, Liefeld has a reputation of being one of the nicest people in the business. Mm-hmm. So if he flips out over, you know, what happened, there's some credence to it. I mean, you know, like his artwork or not like his artwork or his characters or whatever. From what I hear, he's a nice guy. So if he blows up at something, there has to be some credence to it. Not to mention there was other incidents that were alluded to with other creators.
Mm. Now, do you think, I mean, like I say, 10 years ago, we didn't have Twitter and there wasn't Facebook where I didn't know anything about Greg Pak before on the way I Twitter and Facebook. Like, you know, I could see interactions with him on a regular basis. I would never have known if Greg Pak was feuding with Fred Van Lente over something. But now with the way it is today, that would end up on Facebook, on Twitter. I mean, should creators hold back a little bit more, or is this public forum better for the industry because we get to see behind the curtain, we can get riled up almost like a prize fight watching these two guys go at it?
Yeah, but isn't it just comics are just kind of like reaching? I mean, comics have always been more accessible. I mean, with its whatever you want to say, its entertainment, its stars, whatever you want to say, the talent of comics, writers and artists and editors and everyone and creators that you want to see, you have a bigger chance of meeting them in person than you do your favorite movie star, even your favorite radio star or something like that, you know? Radio star. Is that even a fucking phrase? Radio star. The favorite person who's on the radio, if you even listen to the radio, by the way, I'm 90. But like my point is, like, you know, comics have always had that very intimate relationship with their list, the readers and the fans. And now when you go into the social media age, maybe this is just, you know, something else that's going on. I mean, Jesus Christ, how many like celebrities tweet feuds and you know want to be on TMZ because it ups their profile. If at the end of the day this ends up turning Liefeld's creator-owned books or wherever he goes to next, and makes those books hits, then he's pretty much shown, you know, it doesn't really matter what he does, and if anything, it's just garnering attention. Like, I'm not saying it came from that place, but I'm just saying, you know, who's to say? Like, it happens with all other forms of entertainment, so why not comics?
Yes, there's no such thing as bad publicity, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I won't speak directly about any of these guys because I'll never say anything bad about another creator.
No, I agree.
I also won't ever slam another creator's work just because I know how hard it is to do anything good. Mm-hmm. And, right. That's just the way I guess I've done it. I mean, the thing is though, is that, like Joe was saying, different folks are going to do different things, and, you know, they're just going to, you know, folks will choose their own way, and sometimes it'll totally, you know, destroy them, and other times it's actually going to work for them. You know what I mean? I think it's the kind of thing where you just have to pick your own comfort level. You know what I mean? It's like anything with social media. You have to know, you have to decide what kind of, how you want to portray yourself and what makes sense for you. You know what I mean? What's true to your personality and your way of living. And, I think back about like old Hollywood, and, you know, there were a lot of massive jerks. A lot of those old Hollywood directors were tyrants in different ways. And, you read stories about them and there's just a lot of cruelty there. On the other hand, there are a lot of folks who are just really kind of wonderful and warm-hearted and worked in a really positive way with everybody. Both sides made great movies. You know what I mean? At different times, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, my personal preference is always to try is to do right by people and to treat people well. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, and I would recommend that to people. But then, you know, I mean, also, you know, you look at stories about Steve Jobs, for that matter, you know what I mean? Who is, you know, sort of universally regarded as a transformative figure who achieved something no one else was able to. But also was, you know, a lot of people were not at all happy with the experience of working with him. I guess the only thing I could say is that if you genuinely are a genius, you might be able to get away with that kind of thing. And maybe that's part of how you do what you do. But most of us aren't geniuses. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm serious. It's like most of us, we are. In fact, I've argued at different times that nobody's a genius. You know what I'm saying? That everybody, nobody gets there just by being transcendently wonderful and incredibly smart. You get there because you've just worked for hours and hours and hours and months and months and years to figure stuff out, and to get better. And also to build, relationships and a community and, folks who are going to help you and who you're going to help. And that for me has depended upon treating people well and trying to build, gravitating towards people who you trust and who you think are going to treat you well and who you're going to treat well, and talented people too, of course. But, anyway, I'm rambling.
If I could say to Greg's point, like, I think, like, you know, there's like to, I like the old time Hollywood type thing where there were a lot of dicks, there were a lot of people, but you didn't know. Now, mm-hmm. you know, social media, I mean, don't get me wrong. These are people doing things to themselves. Like, Anthony Weiner has no one to blame but himself for what he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but at the same time, like, you know, there's a public face and there's a private face and, you know, it's just all conjecture between us. Cause I mean, you hear Greg Pak, he's the most professional guy in the world. Yet he just texted me, if you call me anything but Mr. Pak again, I'm going to cut you pretty fast. Now, that's professional. Now, sure, I poked through the fourth wall, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a time and place.
True. Okay. Mr. Pak, sir.
And honestly, if anybody's actually followed my Twitter feed at all, I burn my bridges pretty much constantly. I've learned to, like, swim across charred bridges. So,
Well, it's funny because in some professions that's sort of required. Like, if you're going to be a comedian, you know, for certain kinds of, or a satirist, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be Chris Rock, or if you're going to be, you know, like there's a way in which you've got to be free and let yourself criticize publicly the folks you think need to be skewered. That's your job. That's literally your job.
Right.
So, you know, and, but anyway, sorry. Like, I'm blabbing. Somebody save me.
No, but I just like whine on and on on how, you know, just the entry to the biz is, and that's how I burn my bridges. And multiple people have warned me about doing that, and I just at this point just don't care if something. I kind of appreciate the fact that someone is willing to be honest and call out people on things, whether if they check out as true, that's more power to it. I mean, I would rather have heard Liefeld go on about his experience at DC than not.
True. I mean, yeah, hey, as long as you're true to yourself and you're comfortable with it, I mean, we're all on our own. If you feel good doing it, good on you. So, all right. The next thing I want to talk about right now is good because Mr. Moldy is here. His book, Scam, did something unusual that I've never seen before. And this is from Marvel DC Image. I don't think I've ever seen a billboard for a comic. And this got me to thinking about different ways that we could advertise comics. I mean, because you see, I mean, if you look at comics as in the same ballpark, fighting for the same crowd as movies have on the bus stops, on billboards and signs everywhere, radio commercials, TV commercials. It just seems like we could do more for comics. And like, Joe, where did you guys come up? Why did you guys decide billboard? I mean, that seems completely out of left field.
I mean, if anyone's read like the online articles I have called What Do You Really Know About Comics? And that I started doing like a long time ago, like probably like 2 years ago, a year ago, half ago. And that's a long time, by the way, because I have dementia. But my thing was like, It literally is a point of anger for me that comics don't advertise. And, you know, I don't know what the rest of you guys think or whatever. And Greg's a veteran. He knows the industry. But you always hear this thing of, well, what are you going to do? Advertise to the same 100,000 people that buy books. And to me, that is such a failure like I've said a bunch of times, like, you know, comics haven't broken that shackle of the published work being more than what it was in the 50s or 60s for the most part. For most people, comics are they don't know, they're unknowledgeable about what comics really are and the depth and the maturity and just the good, you know, the good space for storytelling that it is. And I've always believed that it's the most innovative form of entertainment we have left. And, you know, fucking hearing that Alf is getting a movie is pretty much point on that, yeah, Hollywood's fucking tapped. You know what I mean? Like they're to the point where they're coming to comics for ideas. Like that's why comics are becoming so prevalent in other media. First of all, now they have the special effects to be able to do it. And, you know, now they're tapping all the originality that's in the comics medium. But my thing is like, I just want people to know about comics, you know, like,
yeah, I gotta say, Joe, I first got to know, you know, heard about Joe because he was doing these amazing interviews with civilians. He was going out, finding people who don't read comics, giving them great comics, and then doing follow-up interviews to see what they thought. And I just thought they were hilarious and also really educational. And I just thought that, you know, and I love that comics evangelism. You know what I mean? I think Joe has done a huge amount to kind of, you know, to make, you know, to get us thinking about how we get comics in the hands of other people. And I think this billboard thing that he's doing is the latest, and greatest in that effort. So I just wanted to, you know, give you a big thumbs up on all that, Joe. I just really admire that.
I appreciate it. I'm trying to think of what I could do next. I'm thinking of skydiving on the election day. I don't know what, but something's got to happen. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is, it's working. Like Maximum Comics in Vegas partnered with us is like people are walking in off the street who have never been in here before.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really, and you targeted, the thing is you picked something that, I mean, you thought it through and you did something that was really going to work for your individual comic book because you're in Vegas, you know, like it's in Vegas, you're doing a book called Scam, you know what I mean? It's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you've got a place where average people walking the streets are going to be attracted to the kind of story you're telling. And a billboard is just a really kind of awesome thing because, you know, anybody, you know, who works in advertising, you know, can tell you that people don't buy something because they hear about it once. You know, they do it because they hear about it 12 different times. Mm-hmm. And a billboard is something somebody could pass by 12 times. You know what I mean? Like depending on, you know, just people who are going about their day. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, but it seems to me that you get multiple hits out of a billboard the way you might not with, you know, with a radio spot. You know, when that radio spot runs out, you know, maybe somebody only listens to the radio on Mondays or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but if somebody is going to work every day and they're passing by that billboard, they're going to think about it multiple times.
Well, I mean, if I could just say one thing, like when Tyler James and myself were coming up with a way to advertise, and I don't want to, you know, spill any beans on, like, so I'm not going to say anything about money, but we were looking at advertising the book because it is the first book to come out publishing wise from Comics Tribe through Diamond. And we wanted to make a splash and we wanted to get people who might not read comics to give it a chance because that's also something that, you know, we really feel strongly about. Like there's a whole untapped consumer base out there and that is something I am fully aware of and fully believe. And when we were looking, we were like, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to advertise on, you know, whatever big name site you think about for comics? But that's so insular. That's so insulary because all you're doing is advertising to comic fans who are important. I am trying to dismiss them. But at the same point, there's a way you can kind of cross-pollinate. So when I said to Tyler, let's do a billboard, you know, then we had to look into that, into the research, into the funding and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, where our billboard is, and it's, if anyone doesn't know, it's on the, it's pretty much right by Las Vegas U University. So you're getting the college kids and also right on the strip, towards the end by Las Vegas, Tropicana Boulevard and the strip. So our point was to try to get, you know, the traffic that's going down to Vegas, which is going to see it, and the students that might not be, you know, giving comics a chance. And,
oh, cool.
Based on a daily percentage, oh, sorry, a weekly percentage, 385,000 people go by that one thing.
Yeah. Wow. And if you can get 5% of those people to try to get your book, it's worth it.
Dude, right. if you get 1%.
Yeah. I mean, compare the numbers we have today for comics, definitely.
See, I'm not like the people on Wall Street. I want the fucking 1%. I want that 1% to come down in the store. But I mean, my thing is also like Jay who owns Maximum Comics. Jay was just saying, he's like, we're having a wide bunch of people who've never walked in before come in. And then to the strength of the entire comic market is you have a retailer who now has this in the store, this woman in the store, whoever, and they know how to then give them comics. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You just can't have someone sit there, you know, playing with their phone and not paying attention or whatever. You got to have, you know, retailers that are just as invested as the creator. Mm. So it's worked out well so far.
That's really, yeah, that's just awesome. I mean, it's funny. I have been thinking a lot about different ways to promote comics as well. And mostly trying to think about ways to do it with no money. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty of it. But you know, like in recent months, I've been, you know, I trained as a filmmaker. I mean, I went to NYU and I did documentaries. I did fiction stuff. And at a certain point I was like, you know, way back when I first did Planet Hulk, I made a trailer. I made and put it up, and Marvel put it up on YouTube and everything. But I've just been busy and I have not had the, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to do that again, but I finally, you know, kicked myself in the butt and started doing that kind of stuff again. And Marvel put those on their YouTube channel. I also had it on my own YouTube channel and I think those things make a big difference. You know what I'm saying? And that's also a way to reach people who you're not going to reach otherwise. I mean, the interesting thing about the Marvel YouTube channel is that it's 90% video game, TV, and movie stuff. Mm-hmm. There's very little comic stuff on there. And so, the fact that I was able to just give them stuff and they put it up there meant that they've got like 300,000 subscribers, I think. So, you know, I did this Extreme X-Men, you know, promo reel thing or kind of promo trailer thing. And, it got something like 16,000 views on there. And it got another 4,000 or 5,000 views on my own site. So, you know, and again, if even a very small percentage of those people actually get out and buy the book in today's market, that's a big deal. You know, so that's, you know, I think finding ways to reach people like that, is important. I mean, I'm trying to build up the, you know, the YouTube channel that I started so that, you know, for whatever I'm doing, I'll plug it there. And, I'm fascinated by the fact that on the one hand, you know, comics seems like such a hard place to make things happen. On the other hand, you've got, you know, folks are doing Kickstarter campaigns where they're pulling in 5, even 6 figures. And, you know, like there is a hungry audience. It's just a question of finding ways to connect with them, you know? And, I mean, Kickstarter is interesting too, because that's not only a way to raise money, but it's also a way to build your audience, because people are, you know, helping spread the word about your thing, and people who would never have heard about your project otherwise are hearing about it because people they trust are telling them about it, you know? So, I mean, all of those things I think are related. You know what I mean? I think we're in a very exciting time where we have a lot more power in a funny way, particularly for independent stuff, than we've ever had. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of figuring out of things still to be done. I mean, I think the tricky thing though is that it's got to be done on a case by case basis, because, you know, Joe thought a lot about it, and he partnered with the right people and figured out the right way to do this thing and the right place to put that billboard. You know what I mean? That's not necessarily going to be the right choice for other projects. Somebody else with a different project is going to have to figure out their own thing. But as more and more people do this, I think, you know, we'll start to get there will be a bunch of examples of interesting things people have done that will hopefully inspire other people to keep doing interesting things.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, like you were saying, it's sad that the Elf movie will have more advertising than like the Justice League or an Avengers comic will. It's just,
yeah. I mean,
do you guys remember years ago? I mean, this is back in the 80s. G.I. Joe used to advertise the G.I. Joe comic after the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember that specifically. Yeah.
Okay. And that was like one of the top selling book for Marvel at the time, the G.I. Joe book.
Of course.
With an advertisement. And I just wonder, like, you know, I just wonder, like, why with a Disney XD channel, and Disney owns the channel, and Disney owns the publishing, why you wouldn't throw in a, you know, here's where you go. Now, the only thing I've been told that kind of makes sense to me is because the publishing line is kind of uncrackable to a new reader. Because if you like that Spider-Man cartoon and you want that continuation when you go into the store, you're met with 15 Spider-Man titles, and it's a confusing transition. Which I do understand, but, you know, I mean, I think, like, Greg said, there's got to be a way somehow.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of product out there that is accessible. I mean, I just wrote this Doctor Strange Season 1 book, which is totally new reader friendly, you know. And there's, you know, there's this whole Season 1 initiative where it's original graphic novels that Marvel's doing that's telling interesting stories early in these characters' careers. And they're perfect for that kind of a thing, you know what I mean? There's always been, you know, great entry level stuff being done. And the whole Marvel Now thing is also, you know, a good way to hook in new readers. And I seem to remember that there was some recent blurb about Marvel planning to do some advertising, some mainstream advertising for the,
that'd be awesome.
For the new stuff. I don't have any inside information on that. I think I just saw that on one of these websites, but, I know that there are very smart people thinking about this all the time, you know what I mean? Within these companies. I'm hopeful that we'll see more of it. I think, but at the same time, it's up to folks on an indie level to make it happen too. You know what I mean? Like to do what Joe's doing. I think that's often where stuff gets proven. You know what I mean? Like if folks make it happen there, then it'll, then other people will imitate, you know, folks will imitate where the success is.
Well, if the money's there to get it done, if you're someone like me who's, you know, scraping by, I can't afford a billboard on Hollywood to promote my book. I mean, I can do
and
the
I
video
will say
channel.
This. I mean, I'll talk off air. It was not an amount of money that you're like, wow, that's insane amount of money. I will say that, like, which is the thing that, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to like say, you know, someone should just toss the money there, but I'm saying like someone was like, that must have been like at least $10,000-$20,000. I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Some forms of advertising. I remember, I mean, years ago I worked in politics. I worked for Ann Richards when she was running for governor back in 1990 in Texas. And, it was shocking how cheap radio was to do radio advertising. In certain markets, you know what I mean? And you know, like I think that we did some radio spots for like $15 a piece. You know what I'm saying? It was like chump change, you know? There are things that can be done. Also, you know, I mean, there's also, you know, free advertising in the sense of finding ways to get press. You know what I'm saying? Like the old local thing, you know, if you've got a local angle for your thing, if you've got any kind of angle that will get you press, you know, I mean, my best experience with this was really with Robot Stories, which was my feature film, that we self-distributed back in 2004. And, you know, we had some money. I mean, I took out a loan to distribute the thing. And so we had some money that we were working with, but it was very minimal. And we just, but we found every story hook we could and we pitched it everywhere. And we got, we got a lot of sympathy press based on the fact that it was this scrappy little independent movie, but also that it was this independent sci-fi movie, which was a very rare thing at the time. We also worked every Asian American angle we could because the cast was largely Asian American. You know what I mean? Like whatever hook you got, there's also lots of just small press that is looking for this kind of stuff to cover. But yeah, and of course, sometimes some of the small press, it doesn't feel like anybody really reads it and it doesn't really move the dial. But these things also are cumulative, you know. Again, it's that kind of a thing where if people start to hear about it from multiple sources, then they're going to get out there. You know, you don't always necessarily know exactly what it was that gets them to the theater, gets them to buy it. But if you've hit it from multiple angles. I mean, the other thing that we all can be doing is just building up our own grassroots connections, our mailing lists and Twitter followers and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I feel like I'm still relearning all of this. Back when I was doing Robot Stories, we did it by collecting email addresses at film festival screenings. And we had a email list of, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 names by the end of our film festival run. And then we used that to push our theatrical run, you know, but every time we did an event, we collected email addresses. And then those people became our evangelists because they had come to an event, they'd had a direct interaction, they enjoyed the movie, and then they gave us their email address. And then we would email them and say, hey, we're coming back to town, please tell your friends. And they would, you know. The advantage of that was that it was a movie, so you can show it in an audience and there's a venue where you're actually face to face with people. I guess, you know, the nearest sort of parallel to that is comic book conventions, you know, where people are building an audience, you know, year after year by going to comic book conventions and stuff. But that's a little more, I think that's harder, You know what I'm saying? In a lot of ways, because it's not like people are going to the convention to see you the way they might go to a screening at a film festival to see your movie. So you don't necessarily have that. You don't necessarily monopolize them the same way. You know
well,
what
the
I mean?
Way Greg's saying it, I think now more than ever, you need to be, even like on a professional level, you need to know how to market yourself.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
right out the gate. Like, you know, I think like it's to the benefit of every creator to know like what you're passionate about and what you, you know, I don't want to say niche, but what your product is, what the genre is, and how to connect with a fan base. And yeah. then it comes to exactly like Greg was saying, like you got to get different. You got to get real different. Like, I actually hung out with Josh, who's on the show a few days ago, and I actually yes. told him a story where at Boston Comic Con this year, I stood in front of my booth, the Comics Tribe booth. I was in front of it. So I'm, you know, trying to get people to come over, and I'm talking to people. And, you know, thankfully, knock wood, we do real good with people at shows because I think we're personable and we have, you know, a good pitch and a good way about ourselves when we get people to come over. So when Scam was first released, it was back in January. It was through a small print run and through a small distribution thing. And what ended up happening was Diamond picked us up and they made us withhold the issues till this month. So at the Boston Comic Con, the book had been out like 4 months. Number 2 hadn't been out yet. And this guy is walking by and he goes, "Oh, Scam, I bought that." I said, "Oh, really?" I was like, "How'd you like it?" He goes, "Yeah, I liked it." He goes, "But that movie guy is just one of those guys who's in it to make a movie. I could tell." And I'm standing right there and I'm like, "No, I can tell you." I'm like, you know, Joe really, really likes comics. Like, he's really comics. Like, he really wants it to go well. And he goes, "Look, I know you got to say that, but, you know, because you work for the company, but I've known fucking guys like him before, and those are the fucking jerks that comics don't need." And I'm like, "Well, everyone's got an opinion, you know, but, you know, number 2 is going to be coming out in October after the reissue, and it's number 1. And then the guy who I work with, Tyler, goes, "Joe, can you sign this?" And the guy looks at me and goes, "Are you Joe Mulvey?" I go, "Yeah, this is one of those times, isn't it?" Like,
that's hilarious.
The audience laugh track. But yeah, but you know, like you have to be engaged with, you know, your audience. Like, and if your audience is 10 people, make those 10 people like love you so that they want to tell, you know, 10 more.
I mean, yeah, that's totally true. It's. I mean, when I was out with Robot Stories, there were times when we had screenings where there were 400 people in the audience. There were times when I had screenings where there were 8 people in the audience. But I treated them the same. And sometimes like that 8-person audience, there might, the person, you know, maybe one of those people is going to be the guy who's got 100 friends in San Francisco and who's going to send them all to see your movie. You know what I mean? It's like, any, you know, any audience can be a great audience. And any time you're talking to somebody, you just know, you know, that person could end up, you know, making a lot of things happen for you.
Well, definitely today with today's technology, you can have, like you said, you can have an audience of 4 people, but one of those 4s can go home and go to his blog that has 50,000 readers.
Yeah.
And okay. Say, "Yeah, I totally love this comic. I totally love this movie." And like you said about appreciating everybody, you know, just to shill yes. my own wares here for a moment. As I got my own Kickstarter just started here for a project I'm working on with Ray Hite called Midnight Tiger. And I'm just like, we just started yesterday. We're already 20% funded, which I'm all pumped about that. I keep staring at the screen, hitting refresh, waiting to see the number change. But I just say, I go, like, I asked Greg to tweet about it. I asked everyone I know. I keep reaching out to everybody I know. That if I see 8 people I don't even know who retweeted, guy has like 7 followers. He tweeted to 7 people. I make sure I go out of my way to tweet or Facebook and say, "Hey, thanks for helping to get the word out. I appreciate it." And just to make sure, I try to show everyone that I appreciate even the littlest bit you help me with. I appreciate everything. And I think that's what you have to do. You just can't assume that these people owe you in any way. They should be spreading the word for my book, because who am I to them? So
yeah, and it's also like, and if anybody ever says nice, says something nice, say thank you. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I try to do that. You know, whenever somebody says something nice to me on Twitter, I try to respond. I don't always manage it, but I always try to, because you know, it actually really does mean a lot to me when people go out of their way to say nice things. And you know, as somebody who's making a book, you know, sending it out into the world, if you, you know, if you hear that it made somebody's day, that makes my day. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, you know, when you respond to folks, it personalizes it, and it means that they're more likely to think kindly upon your future work, you know. So, you know, just as a regular decent human thing, you know, it's always saying please and thank you is a good thing, but it also makes good business sense.
Mm-hmm. I like Greg Pak polite business. That should be the book that you write. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I try. We'll see.
All right. So now we've reached my favorite part of the show, which is to shill your own wear section. I kind of already shilled my wear, talking about my Kickstarter that just started. And I know the three gentlemen I have with me all have projects they own that's either just completed or they're still working on. So I'll start on my screen from left to right. We'll start with Josh Gorfain. I know you just had Meat Space come out. You also had Sterling, a book, I believe you did.
Yes, Sterling by Arcana and Meat Space, which I self-published. This Kickstarter for the second issue will be coming out probably in a couple weeks, or like the middle of September, to get the second issue and hopefully more funded, depending on how successful it goes. More of the same. You can get to the site through Facebook. It's Facebook/ Meat Space Comic, and that's the fan page. Okay. And all the information is there.
Cool. And then your Sterling book, is that available just through Arcana's website?
Arcana website, Comixology is probably the best way to get through it. And through Arcana's website, it should be there too.
Cool. Very cool. Joe, we talked a little about Scam. I don't know if you have anything else cooking. What do you got going on?
Just right now, I'm selling my body on the streets to figure out the next type of advertising venue. But no, beyond that, it's just Scam and all things Comics Tribe for right now. So go to a store, pick up Scam number 1 from Comics Tribe. It's super fracking awesome. And if you do not like it, I will return it. Not the money, just the book. You can give it to me, and I will just take it back to whatever shop you got it at. And that's it.
What's the Comics Tribe website?
It's www.comicstribe.com, and if for any reason you want to listen to anything I have to say, you could go to joemulveyart.com. That's my website. And also follow me at joemulve on Twitter.
Cool. And Mr. Pock, what have you been up to?
I got I've three things I should plug. One is I'm working on an ongoing series for Marvel called Extreme X-Men. If you're familiar with the X-Men, it's really more like Exiles than anything else. But we've got Dazzler and traipsing through the universe, hunting down evil Xaviers with a group of alternative X-Men, including a sort of Teddy Roosevelt-style Wolverine and a kid Nightcrawler. And it's just a total blast. So the second issue of that just came out yesterday, and then the third issue comes out on September 12th.
Just to stop you right there, I love the book. I was a big fan of Exiles, and I totally love what you're doing with this. The whole evil Xavier thing is just, I mean, just the fact that there was a squid Xavier evil thing going on, that made me laugh so much. It was just, it's just a great fun book. If you like alternate reality stuff like I do, you got to read Extreme X-Men.
Thanks so much.
And the original Astonishing arc was really good as well. That's what brought me into it.
Awesome. So yeah. So and then on September 12th, also that's the day that Doctor Strange season 1 book that I was plugging. That's the day that comes out with gorgeous art by Emma Rios. And then at the New York Comic Con, I'm going to be debuting an iPad app version of my Vision Machine graphic novel. That's a sci-fi graphic novel that imagines a world where Sprout Computers has released the II, which is a pair of glasses that lets you instantly record, edit, add special effects to anything you can see and share it with the world just by thinking. It's sort of like YouTube, Twitter, digital video, digital everything, all at the speed of thought. And it changes everything, and then the other shoe drops. It's basically a sci-fi thriller. But we got funding to make an iPad app version of it with a full soundtrack, including voice performances by folks like Phil Lamar. And it's got music, and it's got some awesome animation within it, and like a built-in Twitter feed, and it's really kind of. I'm really excited about it, but we're going to debut it at the New York Comic Con. It's also going to be given away just for free because the funding allows for that. The Independent Television Service came through with funding for it. So that'll be debuting at the New York Comic Con. For all of this stuff, if you want to find out more about it, visit gregpak.com, gregpak.com, and check me out on Twitter. My handle there is gregpak, gregpak.
See, stuff like that almost makes me want to buy an iPad. Almost. I'm a firm Android guy. I just, I have to find my brother has an iPad. I'll have to go over and make him install it and stuff so I can check it out.
Cool. I'm really looking forward to the app, to tell you the truth.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'll release a teaser fairly soon, which shows more of the stuff and also the making of, so you can get a sense of what we're doing. But yeah, it's exciting. I hope if you guys are going to the Comic-Con, definitely please. I would love to have you there. So let me know.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be there.
Damn you East Coasters. I hate you all. All right, guys. I appreciate all the time you had today, and I will hope to have you guys on again soon.
Sweet. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.